Blog Talk Radio.
It's time. Politics on the Navajo Nation, brought to you by Cal Nez Design, and hosted by Cal Nez himself.
Yata'e, Marley Shabalaji and Shia, Tohegalini and Shvon, Nash Ezra, Bashis Team. Greetings, relatives and friends and humans out there. It's Blog Talk Radio time, and I'm here in Window Rock, Arizona, and once again, we're going to have some great conversation for you to tune into. And also, please comment if you have something to say or you'd like to bring up something completely different from what we're talking about. And our call-in number is 347-989-0048. And my co-host is here, Sharon Mays. And once again, I want to thank Blue Sage Tea for allowing me allowing Politics on the Navajo Nation to broadcast out of their business. And Sharon's going to tell us a little bit more about Blue Sage Tea.
Yate, everyone. Blue Sage Tea is a Native-owned company, and this particular company utilizes this amazing plant that grows only in the Greek Islands. And each year, the owners go in the fall to collect this sage, which actually is an amazing plant because it's a cross between a sage and a mint, and they bring it back here to sell in Indian country. And many of our Native brothers and sisters love to use this tea not only to drink, but also they use it in their sweat lodges, and also they use it as incense or smudge sticks. So if you're interested in Blue Sage Tea, they just started with a new product, Blue Sage Soap. All you have to do is go to ebay.com, and in the search engine, just type in Blue Sage Tea. And we'd like to thank them for allowing us to utilize their office and their internet connection. Okay, Marley.
All right. Thanks, Sharon. And once again, I'm going to give you the number. It's 347-989-0048. And first of all, I want to let you know that Noelle Smith, who's the news reporter with the Farmington Daily Times newspaper up in Farmington, New Mexico, will be joining us about 8 p.m., and she'll give us an update on what's happening in the northern part of the Navajo Reservation, which, you know, is around Shiprock, Ninatlizod, and those areas. And then Bill Donovan, who works for the Gallup Independent in Gallup, Mexico, and also he works for the Navajo Times newspaper, and they're located here in Window Rock, Arizona. He is not going to be able to join us tonight. He called earlier and said that he's going to be on a train headed west. And, westward ho for Bill Donovan. Anyway, we'll miss him. You know, he always has some great comments, and I'm sure our listeners will miss him. But it's Sharon Mays and I, and Noelle will be joining us at 8, but if you'd like to make some comments or bring up some topics, hot topics in your area, share some news, and one thing about Politics on the Navajo Nation is that we stand and support Navajo small businesses, so give us a call. And that number again is 347-989-0048. And our first topic for tonight is going to be something that Sharon has a lot more info on. She had more time to go into what was happening on a Facebook site, and it's called Grade Your Council Delegate. I myself was at a couple of hearings and meetings, and so I'll be sharing that with you. One of them was a report that was given by the Confluence Partners, and they were talking about their proposed project over the Colorado, Little Colorado River's confluence, and their project is called the Grand Canyon Escalade. And then I was at Dene College, and I attended the Resources and Development Committee's meeting, and they got a report and an update, final update on the Asai Fire, and they also talked about some of the projects that they had been working on. And then there was a meeting right outside the committee room, which was at Dene College in the gym, and they had chapters that come in, and they were talking for the first time about actually presenting their budget, their needs, instead of having the council just give them an annual budget of $15 million and say, okay, here you go. And that's divided up among the 110 chapters, so that was interesting. But here's Sharon.
Yeah, Marlee, we were just discussing a little poll, a little questionnaire that was posed on a Facebook page that is called Grade Your Council Delegate. And the reason why we found this particularly interesting is there were like 186 people who responded to this, and the question was simply use one word to describe the Navajo tribal government. And some of the answers overwhelmingly were pretty negative, and some of those were dysfunctional, changeable, corrupt, and inept, and as well as somehow. We thought that was interesting. And also chaos, and let's see, some of them, of course, we can't repeat, but let's see, oh, digis, which we thought was interesting, speechless, clueless. And out of those 186 responses, there were only two, and that was one of those was strong. And we actually had there was one word that was used that we had to look up, and it was Christocracy. I hope I don't slaughter that, but it's a word that was used by one of our lawyers that is near and dear to Window Rock that many, many people know, and we had to look that up, and that word simply means a form of government where the least qualified individuals are in power. And so we learned a new vocabulary word today. But what's fascinating about it is this is one of those types of questions that was posed, and people wanted to respond to it, and they did. And sadly, there seems to be a lot of dissatisfaction with the tribal government.
The response from I saw that when it first went up, and I was wondering what kind of responses the question was going to receive. And I know that this website is very critical of the Navajo Nation Council Delegates. They also have posting regarding President Shelley and Vice President Rex V. Jim. And so each one of them is pretty much given a rating. And obviously from this unofficial survey, There are people that are pretty unhappy with the Navajo Nation legislative branch, and what would be good is if this same website would ask for some solutions. What would be the solutions to changing this viewpoint of government politicians? And I say politicians because they are elected, and the this government is a clone of the federal government, which elects its. I hate calling them leaders because there's a real difference between leaders and politicians, especially in the Navajo way. Because, as in the Navajo way, leaders were those that were actually recognized by the Creator, by the Holy Ones. They were the ones that were chosen to lead the people, and they are the ones because they knew the prayers and ceremonies of healing for the plants, for all aspects of Navajo life, and so they could truly, you know, lead the people and take care of them at the same time. And that's what the whole concept of leadership and government meant to the Navajo people. And if you looked at the other forms of leadership across the country of the indigenous people, that's what you'll find. It had nothing to do with popularity, because you could have your popularity easily based on, you know, I'm going to give this to you if you elect me. I'll do this for you if you elect me. And that's where you get the political appointees also. And I'm completely against the that form of our government, which is a clone of the federal government, but allowing political appointees, because then you have these divisions that are headed by these individuals who are placed in there not because of their qualifications. It's based on what they did during the campaign season to get that individual into that position. And you also see that in the legislative branch. You have political appointments for the chief of staff, for his staff in the legislative branch. And there's a huge amount of issues dealing with that. And we have a couple of callers, and so we're going to go ahead and go to the first caller here. Hello, can you hear me? Hello? 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 Can anybody hear me? Can you hear me? Okay. All I'm hearing is a lot of feedback. We're going to go to the next caller. Hold on. Okay. This next caller is, the last four numbers are 7612. Are you there? Hello? This is Politics in the Navajo Nation. Hi. Did you want to comment? No? Okay, that's fine. I think sometimes people call in and then they don't, they actually aren't wanting to make a comment. They would just like to listen. So that's fine, you know, but we have a couple of people here. And again, the phone number is 347-989-0048. And let me try this number again here. Hello? Caller, can you hear us? Oh, okay. All right, I think they're just listening.
Well, getting back to, you know, what we just read, the unofficial poll that we just read on Facebook. Anyway, what is interesting is, you know, this was just, I think a lot of this was just a gut reaction. Yes, it was unofficial, but also it kind of gives us a feeling that there are people out there, a lot of Navajo people that are very concerned about what is going on here in Window Rock. And I don't believe, you know, just by judging by some of these responses, that it appears that there are many people who just don't feel like they're being represented. And that seems to be a big concern during this, you know, campaign.
The presidential forums, and that's why I was asking our listeners if any of them had attended these presidential forums, to give us a call and let us know what they heard and to give us some feedback on whether or not the questions that were being asked of our presidential candidates and the answers that they were giving were actually solutions, real solutions, and the questions were holding them accountable, responsible, if they're going to go into that position, which is this individual is heading the executive branch of the Navajo Nation. And under the executive branch of the Navajo Nation, you have several divisions. You have the Division of Public Safety, which is where you have the Navajo Police, Emergency Management, the Fire Department, Highway Safety. Well, actually, I think they moved that out of there. But you have Division of Health. You have Division of Social Services. You have the Net Education. You also have Division of Natural Resources, which is where you have Parks and Recreation. You have the Agriculture Department. You also have the veterinary program. You have the tribal rangers. You have animal control. And I know that several years back, I remember doing several stories about these feral dogs that were attacking sheep. And just some of these dogs would just, there were so many of them, they would just run just full speed through a flock of sheep. And they would maim them. They wouldn't kill them. They would just go through very quickly, eat parts of their bodies, and it was really sad to see. It was horrific, and for the livestock owners, these individuals who owned the sheep, it really they felt as if they had lost a family member, because those were the sheep that they had raised and they were around them all their lives. And so those are issues. And then you have the agriculture department, and I wrote stories about the ranches and how the ranches, these are Navajo Nation government ranches, and how they were being given out to the people, that there was a certain process. I don't know if you're familiar with it, Sharon, but the tribal ranchers, they're located across the reservation. And if you want to have a tribal rancher on a waiting list, and then somebody who doesn't, you know, eventually maybe for whatever reason it becomes too expensive to have their livestock out there, their cattle and their horses and their sheep, then they'll just, you know, turn back their permit to the tribe. Or the tribe is supposed to be monitoring those ranches, too, and making sure that they're taking care of those ranches. And so, but the waiting list was just outrageous. And people have been on that list for as long as they were on a list for a home site lease. And so there was a huge amount of criticism that had come out regarding the ranches. And then I did a story about all of a sudden one of the Resource and Development Committee members, or Resources Committee members, next you know, she's at the top of the line, and she gets a ranch. Yeah, and so these things were happening. And so the reflection that our people have of our government officials is not good. And I get a lot of criticism as a news reporter. I'm always being told, well, why don't you write something good about us? You know, right? We do good things, and they do good things. Most recently, the council will be looking at legislation before them during their summer session, and that's the week of July 23rd. The summer session, the week of July 21st, and during the summer session, it's generally 5 days, but before them will be legislation that was sponsored by Delegate Jonathan Nez. And that legislation is to replace the local governance centers, which there's five of them, and they're out in each of the five agencies, with 16 administrative service centers. And I know that there's a need for that, because I was at a meeting on yesterday, out at Saylee at Dene College, and there was a meeting between the Division of Community Development Director Leonard Chi, and there were several chapters out there meeting with him about presenting budgets to the council for the first time regarding their actual needs. Usually the council does not accept budgets from the chapters. They'll just give them a certain amount of funding and say, here, this is the amount of money that you're going to get, and, you know, you use it accordingly and within the law. But now the chapters, through the very strong support of the Resources and Development Committee, which is headed by Chairperson Catherine Benally, they are encouraging the chapters to, you know, to go to the council and say, wait a minute, why is it that everybody else gets to present their budgets to the council or into this budget process, but chapters aren't? We're the local government. We know what the needs are. And what you're giving us has never met our needs. And as I was listening to this conversation, this discussion, I was thinking to myself, geez, I remember this discussion, but it was between the tribal leaders and the White House and Congress. You know? Don't you remember that? I mean, how they would, how the tribal leaders, among them Navajo, would go to Congress every budget year and say, what you're giving us does not fulfill the needs under the treaties. We know what our needs are. Let us submit our budgets. And don't put any, you know, attach any strings to us, to it, and tell us how to spend it. Well, getting back to what I was talking about regarding the legislation of John, Council Delegate Jonathan Nez, his legislation would create these 16 administrative service centers. During that meeting yesterday, the chapters, bless their hearts, they're elected officials, they're from the community, they're grassroots, but I could hear in their questions that they really needed support as far as management and creating budgets. I'm a small business person in journalism. I have 28 years of journalism, but during those 28 years of journalism, I never wrote a budget. But I understood them, and I understood the needs. And so I understand them having to write a budget because it takes a long time. You have to go out and get all this information about what the costs are, and especially in the social media age, a lot of things change, the cost and the techniques and everything out there. And that's what they wanted. They were really asking, how do we put our budget together? And they were actually told, put together a dream budget. And they were told, but, you know, don't make it totally pie in the sky, ridiculous, but a dream budget based on your community needs. Submit that. We'll take that to the council during the council session. And these 16 administrative service centers, they're supposed to have staff in there. They're going to have a finance, an accountant, you know, and they're also going to have eventually an attorney that will help them deal with, because they wanted to, these chapter presidents and community service administrators, chapter administrative services, were asking, can we contract some of this work out? And they were, you know, saying, well, what kind of contract work? And there was a lot of guidance and instruction being provided by the Resources and Development Committee. And they had brought in Casey Begay, who heads the Capital Improvement Projects Office. And he was offering his services, but there's limited staff. And so with this legislation that Jonathan Nez is presenting to replace these 5 local governance centers with 16 administrative service centers that will be staffed specifically with individuals to really help the chapters with their budgets, with their accounting, with setting up their land use plan, which is also part of justifying your budget, a comprehensive land use plan.
You know, Marley, every election, we hear about how most of the general funds of the Navajo Nation budget is spent here in Window Rock and how the chapters do not get their fair share. And with everything that you're talking about and with these 16 centers, do you think that that's going to help get some of that, you know, more of the money out there to where it's so badly needed and not just spent on the administration of the tribe here in Window Rock?
Definitely. I definitely think that it will, because when you have actual accountants, and you probably understand this too, Sharon, is that when you have an accountant who has their CPA, they're going to make sure that funds are properly spent, that when budgets are created, they'll be able to give the proper advice. And that's one thing that's been an issue at the chapter level, is that you find where there is no accounting of funds. The management that is hired is not being monitored, and so there's supposed to be annual audits of the budget, and it became I think it might be anywhere close to 50% where the 110 chapters are actually under some type of sanction because their audit was not clean. They had bad audits because they weren't filing their bank statements. They weren't reconciling their bank statements. And that's a lot. if you're running a local government, and the that's one thing, you know, the council delegates, they're elected officials, but they're not required to, you know, oversee that type of accountability. You have the Office of the Controller, Office of Management and Budget that does that. So they have staff that do that. But for some reason, finally the light has turned on that, hey, these are local governments. They need, they deserve, and as a resident, you know, I want my local government to be accountable. But, you know, you still have to give them some leeway. If they're not giving enough money for their projects, and they're not giving enough money to hire competent accountants and skilled people.
Well, in this discussion, we also need to touch on the fact that in many of the headlines, in past headlines, you know, people have seen chapter officials who have been spending their chapter money for personal use and then, you know, having to go before the ethics office and then, you know, we never get that money back. So this should help with that so that there is more accountability, correct?
Well, that's what I mean. The hiring of accountants, which is what you need to have any properly running local government. You look at any local government. You look at the city of Gallup. Who do they have in that position that's doing that for them?
They have they have the city manager, and they also have their accountants, just like McKinley County also has, you know, multiple layers of people that, you know, help with just their budget.
That's what I mean. The chapters are the local governments, and that's why all this talk too about, well, let's certify them, meaning, okay, they have to have this 5 management system in place, and once they have that in place and they show us a land use plan and there's another requirement, then we'll certify them. And when chapters are certified, instead of having come to Window Rock to get their funding, the money goes directly to them. Well, that's the way it's supposed to work. And that was part of the discussion yesterday, was is it really helping chapters to become certified? And in the end, there was a general agreement that it wasn't. It wasn't making any difference. There were certain things that were being allowed for these certified chapters. They could collect taxes. But again, and this was pointed out yesterday by the Resources and Development Committee, they recalled what happened at out at Tuba City, where they were certified, and they were allowed to collect taxes. Now, Tuba City is a very large area, and they have a lot of businesses, which goes back to if you create a lot of small businesses in your community, that those taxes help to support your business it helps to support your local government. And then local government can provide more services, and that's what's happening here at Window Rock. That's the way it is. So at Tuba City, though, they collected millions. And next thing you know, there was an investigation, and they found out that those millions had been embezzled by the elected officials of the certified chapter. And so there was it gave an excuse then for central government to look at whether or not our local government's competent enough, or are they corrupt? What's going on with them? And again, it deals with what laws do we have in place, and it goes back to our original question and this whole discussion starting from grade your council delegate, because it's basically about grading your government and being involved with your government and really educating yourself about your government. And then it comes back full circle, though, to is the government really educating the people about the process? Do they really know the process? Are they given enough time, ample time, to educate themselves about the process? We have all of these resources telling them about how to apply for social services, how to apply for wood, how to apply for child care, how to apply for a job. You have these, you know, job fairs. I would like to see a fair with, where they talk about how, you know, how to make your government accountable. But is our government going to do that? Are they going to tell the people, this is how you're going to make us accountable?
I think that all the candidates that are running in this particular election, they need to realize that, you know, with social media, there has been an awakening of a lot of people who, they had no one to talk to, they had no way to express their, you know, gut reactions to their government, they had no way to network with each other. So this is a very different election because of that, and people are looking very critically at, you know, the government. Before, I would just hear, you know, yeah, negative remarks, but it was never so in-depth, like, we need this, or this is the problem here, or there's this problem in this chapter. Why aren't they doing this? It was always just, yeah, you know, just a summation of negativity. But now this time, we have people who are expressing their opinions on social media, people who are networking, people who are just feeling good that they actually can find other people who are as frustrated as they are, or someone who is actually doing something like they're doing. So all the candidates need to realize that this is a very interesting election this time, simply because never before have we had so many Navajo voters who are as informed as they are this go-round.
Well, that's how tribal government should use social media and should use Facebook instead of trashing it. And that's another topic. Is it on the same grade your council delegate Facebook site that there was a comment regarding council delegate Leonard Tsosi and the remarks that he very disparaging remarks he was saying about the Hopis and the Navajos and the Zunis and even his own people, the educated Navajos.
Yes, there was a post that on Granger Council Delegate, and they were just, you know, going over some of the things that Council Delegate Tsosi, you know, comments that he had made. If you have any, you know, remarks you'd like to join in, you know, this discussion with, by all means, 347-989-0048, if you would like to call and join this discussion. And that particular post by Granger Council Delegate was humorous, but it's, you know, they said, I think that they were kind of amazed that, you know, he has been very, very public about not liking Facebook and not liking Ustream. Now, okay, Facebook is one thing, but Ustream, you know, that is, you know, when they were televising the different council meetings, he, at the very beginning when they first started, he was a little upset because people were making mean remarks. But, you know, there's the old adage, if you can't take the heat, get out of the hogan. So, you know, you are an elected official and, you know, take whatever comes. But the importance of Ustream and, you know, being able to see those meetings is paramount. People need to see, you know, their elected officials in action.
That is part of educating the constituents about their government. The constituents should have so much information that they are, you know, just overwhelmed with the information. And so, but what is getting out is little bits and pieces. And I've talked with Navajo Broadcast Services, and they really would like to be able to Ustream the committee meetings. They would like to Ustream anything that the Navajo government is doing. and even maybe some non-Navajo events. But what's happening, whatever is happening on the Navajo Nation. But they're limited in their budget and in their staff. So what's the $554 million, where is that going to go? Where are they going to invest that in? I'm still trying to get an accurate accounting of how much Navajo money, the people's money, went to Navajo Transitional Energy Company, which is the one that is now managing the Navajo coal mine out in the Four Corners area that they bought from BHP Billiton. And the coal market has dropped significantly. And under that agreement, and obviously President Shelley didn't know about this, but he was planning to have a train rail that would go from through New Mexico, which is just off of the interstate between Gallup and Albuquerque, and he was going to have that go up to the Four Corners area as close as possible to the Navajo mine, and then he said also that, you know, they would be shipping produce from Navajo agricultural products industry down to the rail. But the primary purpose was to get the coal from the Navajo coal mine and then haul it out to the east or the west coast, and then it would go to the European nations. But then someone said, excuse me, but in the agreement that you signed that none of us, the Navajo people, have had a chance to read in detail, and I just heard Council Delegate Lorenzo Curley last Friday. He was saying that not even the council got to see the entire agreement. But they voted on it. Yes, they voted on it. So, anyway, back to the story. So they tell President Shelley, in the agreement that you signed to buy this coal mine from BHP was a legal obligation that the only entity that you will sell the coal to is Four Corners Power Plant. Yeah.
Okay. No. Let's back up. We can't let that just go by. They did not all of the council delegates read it. Okay.
Go ahead.
I you know, they had so many executive sessions, so many closed-door sessions. And I figured that's what they were doing. They were going over the agreement, detail by detail, because they spent an easy, you know, $45 million on that coal mine, $65 million on that coal mine. So it wasn't like they were buying, and it was used. It's 50 years old. So they were, I expected them as a, I just expected them, and we all did. And I thought they did. I really did. I really thought they did until I heard Council Delegate Lorenzo Curley state on the floor of the Navajo Ethics Committee on Friday, June 27th, he said to the council, he told them, reminded them again, you know, this deal that we have that I'm hearing regarding the Grand Canyon Escalade project, he said that it sounded too much like what had happened with the coal mine, where they went behind closed doors, that those agreements were not all provided in their entirety to the council. And this is what happened also with the renewal of the lease agreement with Navajo Generating Station. Though the entire lease agreements were not provided. I don't understand this. So if anything, if you're out there, anybody who's there at a presidential forum, please use my name and say, hey, Marley Shabala wants to know if you will allow all of these agreements, and if you go in executive session, fine, you know, whatever, but, you know, to allow the entire agreement to be provided to the elected officials. I don't understand that. Isn't there some kind of attorney-client violation here? If you're if the attorney is telling the client, go ahead, sign the papers without reading them? And Navajo Generating Station dealt with water. And there was a press release that came out from the grassroots individuals, and they're calling for the accountability also of what's happening with the Four Corners Power Plant and the environmental requirements. These are legally, federally mandated environmental requirements.
Just, you know, to give you an idea of why so many people are so concerned about the Four Corners Power Plant, we just learned that every year that power plant ejects into the atmosphere 100 million tons of pollution a year. 100 million tons of pollution a year. That just absolutely boggles the mind, and all the, you know, potential and the people that are already affected by that. So this is a grave concern for everybody in this area.
Well, you know, I thank the Creator that we have groups out there, because I try to keep on top of this. But trying to read those draft environmental statements, which are about 3 inches thick, and the legalese language in there, the bureaucratic language, it strains your mind and your brain, and you have to stop. But we have into groups out there that look at this and take it seriously, and they come together, because it's a very complicated issue. And on June 27th, there were several groups. There was the Sierra Club, the Dine Citizens Against Ruining Our Environment, the Center for Biological Diversity, the Western Environmental Law Center, and the San Juan Citizens Alliance, that issued a press release. And the press release is titled, Deeply Flawed Draft Impact Study of Four Corners Coal Complex Should Send Interior Back to Drawing Board.
Drawing board.
Well, maybe. Anyway. Anyway. So, then they have a subtitle.
Yeah.
Deeply Flawed, or Cataloging Huge Deficiencies, Groups Ask Feds to Redo It, quote, without the blinders on, and properly assess transition options, health, climate, environmental justice. So this group, and their local, community, regional, and national environmental groups, looked at the Department of the Interior's draft environmental impact statement for the Four Corners Power Plant and the Navajo Mine, which is called the Navajo Mine Energy Project. It's a mine. It's a coal mine. But they, you know, it's like what they call the janitors. Remember, they have these nice little names for them, and they'll have nice, instead of calling them a janitor, they're supposed to be cleaning experts. Yeah, something like that. Anyway, not to put down janitors, let me tell you, I would love to. Anyway, let's see here. Okay, we're back here to the press release. Okay, so it says that the proposed action, these groups are saying that the proposed action in the draft EIS would allow the 52-year-old Four Corners Power Plant, and of course the Navajo coal mine is as old as, to continue operations from 2016 to 2041. 2016 to 2041. And the groups are calling on the Interior Department to take a hard look at the cultural, health, biological, and climate costs of one of the nation's dirtiest coal plants. And there are other groups that have said this. It's not just the environmental groups. It was the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency that called the Four Corners Power Plant one of the nation's dirtiest coal plants. And they said that These groups would like real for the Interior to give real consideration to clean energy alternatives before allowing another quarter century of coal combustion and mining. And they pointed out that in their comments that they sent to the Western Environmental, that were sent by the Western Environmental Law Center by the groups, that the law center said that the groups are challenging the shortcomings in the draft analysis. They say that it's flawed and superficial, and that the agency, the Office of Surface Mining Reclamation and Enforcement, which is OSM, must have had their blinders squarely on while expediting a schedule-driven project. And they go on to say that the deficiencies range from a lack of thorough or expert analysis of alternatives such as early retirement of the power plant in favor of cleaner energy options. And that would allow those employees to transition from a coal-fired power plant into these jobs that are environmentally friendly, because there's huge concerns about the loss of those jobs. But that's where they could also continue their jobs. And so many times I've heard in the council where they'll say, well, all these environmental groups just say, no, no, no. But they're not. I have not heard them say no. They say, we want you to consider these options. And these will continue the jobs. And it'll save the air. It'll protect the health of the workers. And I brought that up, I remember, to President Shelley before they were still in the process of purchasing the coal mine. I said, what about the unions that were there? What's going to happen to them? Are they still going to be unions? What about their health benefits? How is that going to be worked out? And I said, what about, has a nation ever done any kind of study on black lung disease, which is associated with the coal mines? And no answer. He said, threw it off to Indian Health Service. So,
Marlee, talk a little bit about, part of that agreement, in purchasing this coal mine included no liabilities for the coal mine itself. And when people heard that, they were flabbergasted. They could not believe that the Navajo Nation would ever make such an agreement. That's part one. And then the other part I was thinking about is, you were talking about the fact that they're not allowed to sell to anybody else but one particular entity, sell this coal to. And, here in Window Rock, we were getting all kinds of different rumors, and people were talking about, that President Shelley was planning on not only selling to Europe but also to China. Now, where is that at? What's going on with that? And that, that they were going to be making a trip to China to specifically to sell this coal and to find buyers for it. So no liability, and then what's up with China?
Well, again, those are great questions, Sharon, and I'm hoping that the last presidential forum, which is supposed to be out at Crown Point at the Navajo Institute University, that the community will be allowed to ask questions instead of having or submitting questions to the newspapers that are there that are sponsoring this. They should be gathering some of the questions from community people and also listening and giving some feedback, saying, letting the community know, presidential candidate so-and-so, you did not answer the question, and then move on, but let community members know that their question was not answered. But you're talking about the liability of the Navajo, of BHP, now that they have handed it over to the Navajo Nation, that coal mine, and the Four Corners power plant also, because they're connected. Without the coal, the Four Corners power plant doesn't operate. Four Corners power plant is the sole customer of the Navajo coal mine. And so you have this dependency on each other. And one of the issues, like I said, that I brought up to President Shelley was about the health concerns And one of them that has been known for years and years, not just here on the Navajo Reservation, but across the country in what you call Coal Company, which is up in the eastern coast, where they've had coal mining, and up in Wyoming. And back to this press release, that's what that these community or these organizations are talking about. And what they're reporting is that half the population in the Four Corners area is suffering from respiratory, kidney, heart, digestive system, and central brain problems, meningitis, cancer, and rheumatoid arthritis from living in that pollution. And yet they're being told under the draft environmental impact statement, they're setting this baseline where they're saying there are no health impacts from these plants. And you know, we can criticize, and you know, our Navajo Nation government, but this is the federal government. You know, the same descriptions that were heaped upon the council delegate, I certainly would heap upon the federal government, on the Office of Surface Mining and the Department of Interior, regarding making Four Corners Power Plant accountable and the Navajo coal mine accountable, which is us. In my name, the council bought that coal mine. In your name, Sharon, the council bought that coal mine. In the name of all the Navajo people, that mine was purchased. And now we are responsible for the health of our relatives up there in the Four Corners area. And not only that, but it's also the life of the air, the sacred water, the sacred fire, and Mother Earth. And that's why the people are sick, because our air is sick. Our water is sick. It wasn't like that. But it happened as soon as that Four Corners power plant came in. And how do we try to talk to these companies about that? I was really excited. I thought, okay, they're going to have public hearings on this draft environmental impact statement. Finally, there has not been one held on the Four Corners power plant. It was established and created without one, because 52 years ago, there was no such thing as an environmental impact statement from the federal government. So this is the first one. Yeah. Now what are they doing with it? And this is us. These health banks are done to the people out there, to the animals, to the livestock. We're the first ones that it hit, and then it goes out to our relatives, out to our neighbors. But what I hear from the council and from the president is, don't infringe on our economic development.
Anyone who drives over Narbona Pass can simply see the effects of, you know, both of these entities. Some days you cannot even see our sacred mountains, you know, to the east or to the north. On a clear day, usually it's in the wintertime, you can see. But otherwise, it is just so obscured. And I'd like to remind you that you're listening to Blog Talk Radio, and you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation with Marlee Shabala. And we'd like to invite you, if you'd like to make a call and contribute to our discussion. The number is 347-989-0048. And we'll be joined by Noelle, correct?
Oh, yeah. Noelle will be calling at the top of the hour, and we're going to be taking a little break to allow our callers to call in. call in and make a comment. If you don't agree with us, that's fine. That's great. We'd love to hear that. If you have something else you'd like to talk about that's of concern in your area of the Navajo Reservation, please call and share. And for those of you off reservation, I'd love to hear from you to see how you're doing and how the politics here on the Navajo Nation are impacting you. And, okay, that number again is 347 989-0048.
Blog Talk Radio, you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation with Marley Shabala, and we're going to take a break. This is Joy Harjo and Grace. And welcome back. You're listening to Blog Talk Radio, and this is Politics on the Navajo Nation, and we're speaking with Marley Shabala, your host, and I'm Sharon Mays. Marley?
Thanks, Sharon. That's Sharon Mays, and she's my co-host, and she's had some, she was a radio news broadcaster in Gallup, New Mexico. But we have someone that's has called in, one of our callers, and let's see if he can or she can hear me here. Hello, can you hear me? This is Marley, Politics on the Navajo Nation. Hello?
Hello?
Hi. Can you, would you like to make a comment and just, you know, let us know your name and where you're from?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, you know, I'm not a good of a speaker as you ladies do are, but I'm going to try my best. I'm a grassroots person. I'm from Western Navajo, and I've had some grave concerns over the years watching Navajo politics in action in Window Rock, all the five agencies, the chapter levels, about the reckless ways that our tribal officials use the money funding. And the lack of accountability. And I've heard hundreds of people talk about it. I mean, he spent quite a bit of time a while ago talking about it, the need to establish accountability. We've got funding at the chapter level being misused at the tribal departments, using the P cards, them using for personal purposes at the division level, and the various fund, the so many different types of funding that the council monitors and manages, and a lot of it's going to waste. And that funding for, like, what do they call it, discretionary fund? 77 or something like that, 77 council delegate misused it. That's a lot of leaders that they either didn't know or ignored or just didn't know any better. Start giving money to the relatives back and forth to each other's family members. That, you know, it's so discouraging. And my question to that scenario is, why is there no tribal codes, no tribal laws in the books to hold these people accountable? If I went to off the reservation and stole money or misappropriated, what happens? I get indicted, right? You still there?
Yeah.
Hello?
You're right.
I get indicted,
yeah,
right?
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
And then I go before the court, right?
Yeah.
And if there's enough sufficient evidence, and if I'm found guilty, I probably pay a hefty fine or go to jail. Why
yep.
the hell?
Yeah.
Why the hell can't we don't have any laws in the books on the Navajo Nation? Which one of these presidential candidates is willing to put some stringent laws in the books, on the books, so it can clearly establish a process and procedures how to hold people accountable for? For example, in my chapter, Coal Mine Canyon chapter, we got audited a couple years ago. The audit covered a two-year period, 2 years. Within
uh-huh.
that 2 years, there's $272,000 unaccounted for. And that we were told that 2 years ago. And nothing's happening. Nothing happened. Who's responsible for it? It is so disgusting to listen and to talk about things like this. That's issue number one. Issue number two is tribal departments that provide services to the people, namely the youth. Navajo Employment and Training Program.
Uh-huh.
It's Summer Youth Employment, Boys and Girls Club, Chapter, yeah. Summer Youth Employment Programs.
Yeah.
Employment and Training Program, I used to work for them. And at our leadership, they, and through the various sections in the department, requires a hell of a lot of paperwork just to put a student to work for 2 weeks or 4 weeks. Sometimes it's almost impossible to try to get a student enrolled to go to work. That's the tremendous amount of bureaucracy, the red tape it takes for a youth to put the youth to work. The last count that I'm aware of, which was years ago, to submit, to prepare a case and with all the required documents by the tribal department, it took 92 pages just to employ a student, put them on the training program for 4 weeks. And all that gets hauled to Window Rock from Tuba City, I mean, in essence, from all five agencies, they haul all their paperwork, probably 90 plus pages of paperwork, just so the student can work for 4 weeks. And that's without the another thing that they would call competency documentation and paperwork. That's another 30, 40 pages of it. So it is so ridiculous, so redundant. And the director of the department just sits there and twiddles her thumb and says, these are state requirements. These are federal requirements. But the law, the public law that actually governs and guides these programs allows all the Indian nations across the United States the authority to make and customize their own training programs that will fit the need of the people, our people.
Uh-huh.
But instead, they choose to follow state lines, guidelines, and it's just downright ridiculous. In the process, a lot of students don't get paid, or every summer for years and years that I know about. They're always not getting paid on time. Some of them don't even get paid. And I brought this out to the division director one time, Lawrence Oliver, I think his name was. He didn't know enough about how this program worked. It's the department was controlling him. There's a lack of communication. Hello? Am I still on the air?
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah, I'm
still here. I heard talking and stuff. With that being said, you know, I just read in the paper several months ago that there's about $13 million that is ready to be reverted back to the Department of Labor. And it's because of these type of nonsense. It's because of these type of unnecessary paperwork. And it's just so hard on the people. When do we get a leader that will know and understand, you know, the real intricate problems and bureaucracy that we as the grassroots people face every day, every year? And I was listening to your show all this time, and it's just so disheartening. It's just, you know... Our tribal environment is so disgusting, embarrassing. And I hope there's people out there listening that is brave enough to step forward and start talking about it. I know when I go around and listen to people, there's a lot of complaints about it, a lot of complaints. People bitching about a lot of things and stuff, but when it comes time to make a real difference and start standing up, they just go run and hide. And some of these presidential candidates needs to come to down to our the people's level and learn what the real problems are. And so far, I haven't seen any tribal president actually do that. And I've discussed this with Mr. Calnez, and I see a lot of true potential, true skills, true capabilities and abilities, and I'm hopeful that he will, you know, come, you know, at some time be allowed to, you know, use his influence to become our leader and stuff.
Sir,
we need some real people.
We definitely can hear, you know, the frustration that you're experiencing. And, you know, it's one thing for news reporters to try to convey this, you know, the frustration of the grassroots people, but we do appreciate you, you know, sharing your views about this. And I guess one thing that I would like to know is, let's say you're writing a letter to Santa. What is your wish? What kind of a leader do you want? What are you looking for, you know, in this election? Who do you
want at the
helm of the Navajo Nation?
I can tell you that I would like to see a Navajo presidential candidate elected that has the confidence and the courage to throw away 50% of the stupid guidelines, dumb policies, just throw them out in the trash. Throw them in the trash. That includes the economic development requirements, criteria, all kinds of just ridiculous, you know, it just bombards entrepreneurs and business people. It discourages people from trying to go into business. Throw away 90% of the paper documentation that the employment and training program requires and says that it's a criteria. I want a leader that will be able to do that, go back to a little bit of simplicity and stuff, and be able to get things moving. Right now, I think a lot of the presidential candidates are too scared to rock the boat, to really, you know, make some drastic changes. That's what my wish would be, along with 1,000 others.
You know, there are also council delegates that are running for the 24 positions. Do you think that they make an impact to just as much as the president, or where are they at as far as making the government accountable? Because you mentioned the 74 delegates and the discretionary funds, and then we were talking about the presidential candidates. And that's the thing about this government that we have. It's a three-branch government. You have the council, which is the legislative branch, the president, which is where you have the executive branch, and you're right. You're absolutely right. That's where Lawrence Oliver sat, and he was the Division of Human Services Director. And he actually, though, he was a political, all those division directors are political appointees.
Yeah, they don't know nothing. He's just putting up fires here and there.
And for Lawrence Oliver, he was actually associated with coal. He was with the United Mine Workers of America. And he went into that position under President Shirley. And that's when Shelley was vice president. But the council changes a lot of these plans of operations. They just did that with the Department of Personnel Management, where they said that now the requirement to go into a position would no longer allow an individual to come forward and say, well, I have this many years of experience. It's called the equivalency clause, and they removed that and replaced it with a requirement that you have to have a degree for almost all of the positions with the tribe now. And if you go into a new position, that you those that requirement follows you. But if you stay in your old position, you can keep your old position with your experience. But if you try to move up into the ranks, you have to have a college degree. So when you're talking about the bureaucracy and all the red tape that's happening, it just seems to be adding up more. I know that they're trying to streamline some of it, so there's some positive things that the government tries to do, but it's a kind of a hit and miss, and I really believe it's because the division directors, which are supposed to be the individuals overseeing how a division is managed, they're not qualified, and so they don't see that these all this red tape to hire a student for the summer for 2 to 4 weeks. You don't need 9 pages, 92 pages, that you don't need I don't know how many pages to start a business either. They're, you know, during one of the shows, Cal actually talked with the Regional Business Development Office, and they admitted they had spent up to $3 or $4 million, and they had created 2 businesses or 3 businesses.
Yeah.
And
crazy.
Yeah, and so, you know, I don't, you know, I'm totally amazed. I mean, I can't understand how anybody who has that kind of record would run for office again and expect people to vote for him.
Yeah.
But what you had to say, sir, was completely understandable. And it's real, and I've been here in Window Rock, and I've seen it, I've heard it, I've watched it, and I've tried to report on it as much as possible and get that news out to the people, thinking that the people, they want to change, they need this information, and they'll step up and do what they can. So thank you for sharing that. Thank you for calling. I really appreciate that.
One more point. A lot
sure.
of the middle management, namely the department directors, they've been there for eons, like 1,000 years each and stuff, and they're just set in their ways and stuff. They need to get out of their way, bring in new people that will be able to, you know, be confident enough to make some drastic changes and stuff, and streamline a lot of these systems. Anyways, that's my frustrations.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, and what you're talking about is making those changes at the top, because who hires those department directors? Who allows them to sit there and just get a paycheck? If you have a division director who's qualified, they'll know how to properly, legally, fairly evaluate their personnel, their employees, to make sure that they're fulfilling their job description, that they're providing services to the people, that they're earning their paycheck, and that, hey, maybe they do deserve a raise, you know? Maybe they deserve
yeah.
that bonus, you know?
And maybe they want more training,
you know?
It's because of those same problems that the youth faces, the veterans, you know, from the United States Army, the Marines, the Air Force, the Coast Guard, you know, they face the same problems. It's a brick wall of bureaucracy. It's a joke the way they're trying to help them out and stuff. They should open the doors a little bit, relax a little bit, loosen a little, get rid of half the policies and stuff and help these veterans.
You're absolutely right. You're right, and the federal government does need to be held accountable. They're the ones that, you know, said sign this paper and had you say, you know, you're going to be with them for X number of years and you're theirs, and in return for those years of service, you've earned these benefits, you've earned these rights. And they should, you know, come forward to the tribal governments and say, hey, you know, this is what this individual earned under service for us, you know, and help, you know, set up a VA hospital here on the reservation instead of forcing our veterans to drive to Albuquerque, to Prescott, to down to Phoenix. And yeah, you know, and then Phoenix was where they had that huge, they found out that they were actually had a system in place where they would make the veterans wait and wait for an appointment. And I don't want to assume this, but it seems like they were sure hoping that veteran would just, you know, literally die, you know, and
yeah,
then they wouldn't have to help them. And that
was
just Phoenix. And where I haven't heard anything from President Shelley about that, Vice President Rex Lee Jim from our own VA office, from any of the council delegates. But what's up with that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. You know, we just need to somehow wake up. We need a true leader. We need a real leader.
Well, with people like you having those thoughts and sharing your thoughts and speaking out, it'll happen. But the sit back and don't say anything, then they just sit. I hear this in council. I hear them say, well, nobody said anything. Nobody commented on the legislation. You know, they hired us to make decisions, so let's make it for them.
Yeah. Let me encourage everybody in Navajo.
Go ahead.
Is there a lot of people listening?
Is this
on live radio?
Oh, yeah. It's live radio.
Let me throw in a couple of Navajo words and stuff. Quatsunae daisnos tragi anote hajo payatas kia asit nature nahot ideneni tlini kote naik aden naik agi as voters. We're just being taken for granted day in and day out. Donde ikia teilti. At ashamot da pe teilti tishin. Ben has ato ben ha hot iton hitate ko tit abaya titit or yo yash kitanda. I'm just trying my best. So I encourage everybody that's out there that's listening, now's the time. Call in. Say something. That's it. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Go in it. Okay. And we have another listener on the line. And hello?
Hello?
Hi, it's Noelle. Hey, what's up?
It's not much, just listening to the show. How are you doing, Marley?
Oh, we're doing good. Did you hear our caller?
Yeah, he had some interesting thoughts and point of views. And hello to Sharon.
Hello, Noelle.
She's over there, you know, way far away. But you can still hear her. And Bill's not going to be able to join us. But, oh, for our listeners, this is Noelle Smith. She's a news reporter for the Farmington Daily Times. And before she worked for the Farmington Daily Times, she was with the Navajo Times newspaper. And she was also out in, you did a lot of traveling under your fellowship, too. You were in Dallas?
I worked at the Houston Chronicle and also a publication in Michigan called Midland Daily News and the Seattle Post-Intelligencer up in Seattle. It's a variety there.
So what was happening up in your part of the Navajo Rez?
The old same old, same old, you know. let's see. Within the past week, I wrote a story about a Shiprock resident who's going to start her service on the Navajo Women's Commission. The commission's first meeting will be on July 11th in Winter Rock, and representing the Northern Agency with the Reverend Shirley Montoya, and she's joining four other Navajo women to start service on the commission, which is a five-member commission that was established in 1985, and among its port women in developing their skills, continuing their education, and retaining leadership roles, both in the community and at the tribal government level. And the commissioners also assist in setting government policies related to Navajo women. And so I met with Ms. Montoya on Monday at the Healing Circle Drop-In Center, which is a community center in Shiprock, and she is the project manager there. And she said that she was actually asked to serve on the commission by Navajo Nation First Lady Martha Shelley and First Lady Shelley's office. And so Ms. Montoya said she was honored by that nomination. And so she went ahead and submitted her resume and a letter of interest and was appointed to the commission, and it was confirmed by the NABI KST committee on June 13th. And so she said she's always had an interest in working with women and promoting their status in the community. And she was born and raised in Shiprock and graduated from Kirtland Central High School in 1988. She earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in sociology from Fort Lewis College in Durango, Colorado. And then in 1992, she earned a Master of Divinity degree in theology from the Elif School of Theology in Denver, Colorado. And so she is an ordained minister in the United Methodist Church, and she retired from the church in 2006. And part of her reason for retiring was to return home, which she did in 2007, to work with the Navajo people. And so since returning, like I said, she's the project manager for the Healing Circle Drop-In Center, and she's also found a support group in 2009 called Sisters in Circle, and it's a place that offers women to share their experiences and struggles with balancing everyday life, and they hold an annual conference to help to celebrate the women in the community, and they offer workshops and keynote speakers and entertainment. So she's looking forward to her service on this commission and seeing what she can bring to it, and hopefully what can the commission can bring to the Navajo people in terms of trying to amend some of the laws and maybe bring forth some initiatives.
Does she have any like projects that she mentioned she'd like to work on?
She really didn't get into that much detail because she wants to also see what results from their first meeting, see where the commission stands. So my understanding is that they haven't met in 2 years. So she's wondering where they left off in terms of projects, and then also maybe what the other commissioners would like to say or what they would like to bring to the table. And so she's waiting until that first meeting occurs and then go from there.
Oh, okay. I was just wondering if she had anything that she was going to bring to the table. I guess that's what I was talking about. Mm-hmm. But that's interesting. She's she has a degree in, what was it that you call that?
In theology.
In theology.
Mm-hmm.
So she has her own church?
She was actually doing her church service in Arizona with the United Methodist Church establishment there. And she's also, I guess, right now trying to help I don't know if it's if they call it congregation still in the United Methodist Church faith, but she's helping establish one in Cortez. And so, and I asked her, you know, has she always been interested in religion? And she said, yeah, that started off when she was small. Her grandmother taught her how you use cedar to pray. She said her father was a Christian and he believed in prayer, so she called him a praying man. And she said that she doesn't find any conflict between her Christian faith and then also following the Navajo traditional teaching and style of religion. She's learned how to balance the two, and that's how she approaches her point of view on religion. And I thought that was pretty cool. And I guess she wanted to become a minister, and she didn't know that you need a bachelor's degree in order to go on to divinity school. And so she looked up, she did her research and found that out. So she said, I decided I'm going to go and get my bachelor's degree and, you know, pursue that dream of becoming a minister. And she has the support of her husband and her family to do that. And so I thought she was a pretty cool person to talk to and interview. And
how old is she?
I did not ask that. I kind of forgot to ask that. I've been a reporter X amount of years, but it's always still awkward to ask ages.
I know. I feel the same way. Yeah, I know.
Do you use a leeway? I always use a leeway. Like, I know this is a strange question, but...
Noelle, my news director that trained me in, you know, becoming a news reporter, he once told me, and he quoted Joan Rivers of all people, he said, "A woman who will tell you her true age will tell you anything."
I believe that.
Absolutely. Well, I'm good. I'm glad that you we now know, and our listeners know, that the Women's Commission, Navajo Women's Commission, will be having their first meeting on July 11th. And do you know where that's going to be at, Noelle?
I don't know where in Window Rock it's going to be, but I can give you the names of the other commissioners who were confirmed, if you like.
Yeah.
Okay. Also confirmed to the commission were Sharon Jackson of Church Rock Chapter, and she will represent the Eastern Agency. Vivian Arvisa of Tohatchee Chapter, and she will represent the Fort Defiance Agency. Lilota Paddock of Cameron Chapter will represent the Western Agency, and Charlotte Begay of Mini Farms Chapter will represent the Chinle Agency. And from what Ms. Montoya told me, she thinks that Charlotte Begay is a returning commissioner. So she's, like I said, looking forward to that first meeting and seeing where everything stands and what they can do.
That will be interesting. I know I don't remember the last things that they did.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember anything that they did?
I remember writing about the Office of Navajo Women and Families, which the commission is a part of. I remember they were facing, like, I think, elimination because of budget shortages or something to that effect, and I remember writing that story for Navajo Times, and I think that's the only time I've really, you know, reported on the office and the commission. And at that point, I think the commission was still meeting.
The Office of Navajo Women and Families, they went before the Nabok Iyedik Committee. And they actually reported to them that under the plan of operation that they would nominate 3 women to that commission.
Mm-hmm.
And then the First Lady's office would nominate 2. And then
mm-hmm.
those would move forward. But instead, the First Lady went and removed their 3 recommendations and put in hers. So all of them are from the Office of the First Lady.
That's interesting. Yeah, I reached out to the commission to get their get some more information about the commission and how the commissioners were selected and appointed. But the office director was unavailable until Wednesday, and I was writing the story for Tuesday, so I didn't get that side, and I would have liked to have included that in the story, because I'm sure people aren't aware of how this process is done, and and maybe I could have found out then too where the commission had left off on.
Yeah, it would be interesting to find out what the statistics are regarding Navajo women on the reservation, and even just wherever we're at off the reservation,
mm-hmm.
because that was one thing that Navajo Human Rights Commissioner, Dr. Jennifer Dinetdale, was interested in finding out. She tried to find out, gather statistics on domestic violence, specifically dealing with Navajo women. You have a lot of these statistics nationally and even internationally for Indigenous women, but not specifically for Navajo. I'm not sure if this is true about the tribe. So it'd be interesting to see if this commission is going to tackle those issues and also sexual harassment in the workplace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd definitely be interesting. Well, if I find out where they're meeting at, I'll pass that information along to you, Marley, and maybe you can attend the meeting.
Oh, yeah.
Be the eyes and the ears for the people.
Well, it helps, to have other eyes and ears out there, that can track these things for me, because I totally missed that. I was there when they confirmed them, but at that point, there was no announcement when they would be meeting, or, I just didn't have any time to do any kind of a follow-up. So what else did you cover?
I found out there will be a special election for the Tisosakai chapter, which is Burnham chapter, for those who don't know the Navajo name for the chapter. The voters will be heading to the polls on July 8th to select a chapter president. The special election is being held because of the former chapter president, Lester Begay, was recalled as chapter president on May 5th, and that was through a recall petition that was filed with the Navajo Election Administration. And I was actually contacted by Lester Begay, who sent me a 4-page press release in which he denied some allegations and accusations he said are being made against him by some members of the chapter administration and also some of the chapter officials. And so I called Virginia Nelson, who is a voter registration specialist with the election office in Shiprock, and she confirmed that Begay was removed as chapter president, and it was an office he was elected to in November 2012, and that the special election will be happening on July 8th. And so under the Navajo Nation Election Code, Navajo Election Administration is authorized to declare a vacancy upon final certification of a recall petition. And so she also explained to me that Lester Begay's name is going to automatically appear on the special election ballot alongside presidential candidates Raymond Anderson and Perry Begay Sr. So that's something going on in Tisosakai chapter.
Well, that's, a lot of times it's difficult to recall your elected official. How many, do you know how many signatures they got to recall Lester Begay?
I asked that question, and I also asked who filed the petition, and Ms. Nelson kindly informed me that I have to fill out a public information request form, and her office faxed that to me in the newsroom, and I filled it out and faxed it back to them, and so far I have not received any type of additional information about it. But
this was over at the election office?
Yes, at the election office. So I figure tomorrow I'll give them a call and see where things stand as far as my request. And I kind of found the request a little odd because they were asking me for my chapter and also my census number. And I don't see any reason why I would need to supply that information, so I politely did not.
That's wrong. I mean, you're a news reporter. It's a request regarding information for the public regarding their public servant.
Mm-hmm. And they have, on the release, the request for a release of information, they have a little, like, two paragraphs acknowledging that you're receiving these documents and what could happen to you if you, you know, release them to people who are not, who did not also request the information. So on my release form, I made sure I put a note that the information will be used for publication and news story to cover my bases.
That is just awful. I hate this. I remember last week, and I wish that Bill had been on there. Remember we were going to have him go and take a poll and find out which of the candidates, political candidates, are refusing to have their contact information, especially phone numbers, released to the news media.
Right. I remember that discussion.
And this just goes along with it. This is the tribal election office. And you have a political person. I mean, you had, is he still there, by the way? He's running for president. Edison Winika.
As far as I know, he is still the election the director of the election administration. I haven't heard otherwise.
Do you know if he's campaigning on transparency?
You know, I don't know what his platform is, and I haven't heard it. It would be interesting to hear what it is.
We need to all go, you know, and write him a letter, each of us, you know. Think, what is going on with your office? You know, this information is definitely information that the public deserves to have, needs to have, should have. And so we're just trying to get that information to them. We're actually helping them, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, but in Lester Begay's four-page press release, he did mention that.
Wow, four pages.
Yeah, he said that it was the vice president's wife who led the recall petition that was, she was the head of the committee to recall him. And so I reached out to the vice president of the chapter, and his name is Arthur Yazzie, and he said, quote, "There is nothing to explain," in a quote. And so I was in the process of asking him a follow-up question, and the phone call disconnected, and I figured maybe he went into a no-cell zone out there in Sesosuka chapter. I travel through there most during the weekend, so I know that cell reception is spotty, so gave him the benefit of the doubt, and so I tried calling him back at least three times, and it would just roll to voicemail, so I didn't get any chance to ask follow-up questions about the situation that's going on out there. And Lester Begay also mentioned some problems he's had with the administrative assistant of the chapter named Paula Begay, who's no relation to him. And so when I called her at the chapter house, she said she was referring all questions to Arthur Yazzie. So it'll be interesting to see what the outcome of this election will be.
Well, that is interesting that he gets to have his name on there after being recalled, and that the vice president's wife was involved, and obviously an administrative assistant is involved. It sounds like a coup.
it sounds that way.
That's,
yeah.
Well,
we'll see how it comes out, what the outcome will be on it. And if
so, are you going to go to the special election then? On the 8th?
I got to mark it on my calendar and definitely keep an eye on it.
Yeah, that's Tuesday.
Mhm. Yeah.
Yeah, next week, if you can give us the outcome on that.
Okay. I'll put it on my calendar to remember.
Oh, cool.
And then today I did a kind of a non-Navajo Nation story, and it was this program that the New Mexico State Library is sponsoring, involving teaching kids, getting kids more involved in science, technology, and engineering, art, and math, and they're showing them how to use 3D printers and how to scan for 3D printers. So I went to the Aztec Public Library on that. And I actually met a Navajo lady there, and she brought her, I think it was 8-year-old daughter, to learn about the printing process. And the daughter's name is Mackenzie, and she actually got her from her shoulder on up, so her shoulder and her head, scanned. And so they were going to make a 3D image of that. And it's just going to be like this 1-inch tall mold model of Mackenzie's head. And so Mackenzie was all fired up about it.
Wow.
And the company that's helping the library program with this is called Parachute Factory, and they're based out of Las Vegas, New Mexico. And their director is named, what was it? I want to say Marcello, but I think that wasn't it. Anyway, their Parachute Factory director said that one of the reasons why they decided to jump on board with this is to expose the kids to science and technology, and then also that the library was sponsoring the series, and in a lot of these rural communities, the library is the center of the community. You know, people go there to obviously check out books, but also use the computers for internet, use the coffee machines for their business needs, and libraries hold different community programs. So that's what he liked too, that they're going to get that exposure out there in the rural community. So they're visiting 18 different libraries across the state of New Mexico. And this week they've been in the Four Corners area. They were in Bloomfield on Monday, Tuesday Farmington, and today and tomorrow in Aztec.
Noelle, you know, that's really exciting because, Marley, I'm sure you remember this too. Remember in the early 90s, there were quite a few very important laboratories as well as engineering firms that were coming out here specifically to recruit Navajo students. And that's something that Navajo students absolutely excel in, is the ability to see things in multi-dimensions. And they were doing studies. Do you remember this, Marley, during the early 90s? And psychologists were studying Navajo children to find out how is it that they are able to see things in 3D when it is a difficult thing for other students to do. And they came to the conclusion that a lot of it had to do, kind of a two-pronged explanation. First of all, the fact that they live out in this wide open spaces and they're able to see things, you know, in distances that many other students are not, because they're surrounded by skyscrapers or multi-buildings or, you know, and Navajo children can see to the horizon oftentimes where other students cannot. Everything is blocked. And then the second thing they were talking about is our traditional stories, how, you know, one world to the next world to the next world. And they're kind of geared in that mentality of seeing things, you know, in these different stages, in these different dimensions. So it's pretty exciting that, you know, they're continuing to want to nurture that and, you know, recruit Navajo students for, you know, such important, you know, positions in engineering and in science. Noelle?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You. Yeah, so, yeah, I'll never forget those explanations because once I heard those explanations, I remember walking out or whenever I would be out, you know, in the outback part of the reservation, I would be looking and I was like, oh, my goodness, yes, I think I understand exactly what they are talking about.
I could do that. There's a benefit for living on the land.
You know, I pulled up your Facebook image of the 3D items, and I see it's very colorful, the optic lime circles, and there's that wonderful image of a twisted cone or cross. And so what is that?
So is it the purple? one image with
yeah.
the purple. It's a vase. It probably stands about 6 to 8 inches high, and the guy who runs the parachute factory, the director, his name is Mariano, and so he was telling the kids that just to print that 6 to 8 inch tall vase took about 5 hours. And so when they scanned the kids' faces and heads and shoulders, he had to reduce the size of the image to at least about an inch to a half an inch, because if they were to print the entire image at the actual size, it could take up to 10 hours for the printer to complete. And so by reducing it to the size he did, which was, you know, an inch to a half an inch, it took about 10 minutes to make each of those molds or models. And so I saw one get completed that was taken by a girl named Allie, and she sat there with her mom watching the 3D printer as it went, like, layer by layer. And they used, what was it he called it, rather than, you know, paper and ink to, like a normal printer uses to produce a document, they use what is abbreviated PLA, and it's a corn-based plastic biodegradable material. And so it goes like layer by layer and just, you know, makes this 3D figure. And so it was fun just to watch the printers, and you hear the printers make all these like little robotic sounds, and that was just exciting. And all the kids were just excited. When the guy said, "Who wants to volunteer to be scanned?" like, all their hands went up because they were all like, I want to do it. It was pretty cute.
Who wants to be scanned? Of course, the kids would raise it. That is great. I love that. And I just, you know, that when you're talking about that, they're visiting all these libraries. That is what is so missing from the Navajo Reservation are libraries. Mm-hmm. And then the libraries that are here, they're not open 7 days a week or after 5.
Mm-hmm.
And there are just so many projects that could be for the children. You know, we have
yeah.
so much out there for the adults, but what's there for the children? And this is a learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the other day I went to Navajo Arts and Crafts, and I was waiting for a friend of mine. And this little boy was sitting there reading a book, and his grandmother had to keep calling him. And he says, "I just want to finish reading this, Grandma." And I thought, geez. And when he was walking by me, I told him, I said, "I love it. It's great." I said, "You keep up reading." I said, "This is wonderful. Congratulations."
Which is cute. That's so good to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I came across this wonderful quote by Ray Bradbury, and it deals with just what you're talking about in reference to the libraries. And the quote is, "The problem in our country isn't with books being banned, but with people no longer reading. You don't have to burn books to destroy a culture. Just get people to stop reading them."
Mm-hmm.
Ray Bradbury. So,
and he wrote Fahrenheit 451,
so that is really
right?
exciting what you're talking about with all the libraries.
Mm-hmm. Well, well, Mr. Bradbury's book, you know, Fahrenheit 451, deals with all that if that part of our knowledge base is eliminated as far as, you know, reading books that particularly society may not at all agree with, but it's there to expand your mind. So, but I looked at the list of the 18 libraries that they the program will be visiting, and the closest that it comes to the Navajo Nation are the ones that are being offered this week. And I think there's only like one Pueblo tribe listed on that listing, or near a Pueblo tribe, and I think that was Powaki. Other than that, it's mainly in communities. So hopefully if they do this again next year, they can maybe come to one of the libraries that are set up on the Navajo Nation.
Well, it goes back to a report that I heard from the telecommunications office, and they were talking about offering free Wi-Fi But they said, that, and it's under a federal grant, but they said that for that to work, that there has to be a library where they can set up the free Wi-Fi, because that would mean that the community would be using it. And I thought to myself again, you know, definitely need libraries, because it's not just for the reading of books, but students need it. My nephew is looking for a place to use a Wi-Fi and do some of his college work over the Internet, and he came up to the house, and so we, you know, made a little area for him to sit down. And I see that, this complete need, not just for coming in and taking and checking out a book, but looking at magazines, filling out your employment form, and for something this wonderful, which you went to, the 3D workshop, where I can just see those kids and the person saying that, you know, well, who wants to be scanned, you know? Who would ever know that that question would be asked of children?
And I love how they responded without hesitation, too. You know, no question of, what do you mean by scanned, or what's this for? They went with it.
And that's it, you know. Something for the children. I just, you know, I'm glad you went over there and did that story. I saw your photos on Facebook, and I was looking at it, and I thought, wow, I would have loved to have gone to that, you know, and watched it and seen what happened, you know, and that those type of activities are so needed still on the Navajo Reservation and just out there for the children, funding. And did you get to get scanned or take anything away with you?
No, but I did check out some of the different objects they had on the table, and they had made bracelets, and I guess some of the members of the parachute factory were scanned, and so they had their little models out to the different poses they did, and of course that purple vase was there, so there was things that the kids could look at and hold and check out to see what has been created out of these printers. And, of course, you know, if you go online and Google 3D printers, you can see all the different things that can be done with a printer and how they're using it to try to replicate, you know, my coworker Ernie Zaw was saying that when the tribe was trying to figure out how to fix some of the windmills out on the reservation, they talked about using 3D scanners to produce some of the parts that are no longer available to help fix those windmills. So I was like, that would have been pretty cool. But I think the cost associated might be a little bit of a factor, because the guy was saying, like, one of the printers they had was like a $10,000 printer. And I was like, oh my gosh, if you break that, you're out $10,000. Unless you have another printer on standby that can make a part for it.
Wow. Wouldn't it be wonderful to have like Navajo Technology Center or something like that, where you have all of that in one area with all these Navajo professionals that know how to use it? I mean, that would be a huge investment, because they would know how to take care of it, you know, not just have anybody go in there and start messing around with it to produce these 3D images, because you could use it for so many things. But I'm really glad you covered that, Noelle, and that's so wonderful. So I wouldn't say that was, you know, not related to the reservation, because it is, you know. We all live in 3D, so. But we got to hit the road here, and I'm going to look forward to listening to you next week, your report on what's happening out at with the special election. And anything that you're going to be reporting on that you want to let us know that you'll be covering?
Other than the 3D story, I'm also going to try to look into Chief Spring Chapter changing their name to the Navajo version of the chapter, which I cannot pronounce, unfortunately, but I will give the chapter a call tomorrow and then find out how you pronounce their Navajo name, and that will be going to the council during the summer session later this month.
Oh, good. You're coming out to the summer session?
As far as I know, I should be there.
Oh, good. Okay, then. Well, thanks for calling in, Noelle.
No problem, and I always enjoy being on the program.
Okay. Well, for our listeners, this is Marlee Shabala with Politics on the Navajo Nation, and my co-host is Sharon Mays, and we'll be looking forward to hearing from you next week, 7 to 9. Call us. Hakoanet.
Blog Talk Radio, you've been listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation with Marlee Shabala. Thank you to all our listeners for joining us, and we will talk again next week. Politics on the Navajo Nation is sponsored by CalNez Design.